Have you ever had a fantastic experience with healthcare? What about a not so great one? Well, here at the Alinea Life Podcast, we're going to talk about it. The Alinea Life Podcast, a production of the Alinea Collective, exists to be a public resource to you, the listener, who at some point or another has been a patient of this crazy thing we call the healthcare system. Co-hosts and doctors of physical therapy, William Mills and Joey Rosie, interview experts in the fields of physical rehabilitation, fitness, and medicine, as well as the athletes and patients, on their experiences with the good, the bad, and the ugly of healthcare. That was better. I was happy with that one.
The topics discussed in this podcast should not be considered medical advice or a means of diagnosis. If you're in need of medical attention or advice, seek a licensed healthcare professional. The conversations in the Alinea Life Podcast are intended for adult audiences only. And though we keep most topics professional, there is occasional strong language.
Hello, and welcome back to the Alinea Life Podcast. My name is William Mills. Today's episode is with student physical therapist Melanie Hudson. This episode was filmed in a Panera Bread. You'll probably hear a little bit of background noise, which is fine. Kind of sets the tone. But I was in Christiansburg, Virginia, with the Musings Tour 2018 coming to a close. And I got to spend the day with Melanie at her first internship. She was at an outpatient physical therapy clinic. Got to hang out with her, saw how that clinic did things, got to hang out with her clinical instructor. It's a good day. And then we went to Panera Bread and chatted about physical therapy stuff, strength stuff, how to be stronger, what to consider with communicating pain. It was a great conversation. Hope you enjoy it, and thanks for listening.
Are you a Greg Lehman fan girl?
Yeah.
I'm recording, by the way.
Oh, great.
That doesn't have to be. I mean, I could edit it out if you want. No, or you could just tell the world that you're a Greg Lehman fangirl.
I am.
Why?
Because
like, what's your favorite thing about Greg Lehman? He's dreamy?
No. I just.
His accent?
Yes. I like him. I listened to this podcast with him and Adam Meekins, and it was like the best podcast ever because it's like my two favorite people in one podcast.
Uh-huh.
No, I like his whole, you know, calm shit down, build shit back up. It's like my favorite. I feel like it applies to everything, you know?
Does he have t-shirts?
No, he should make them, though.
Would you wear that t-shirt?
Yes. I was going to wear the Manual Therapy Sucks t-shirt to my final practical and decided it wouldn't be appropriate. Because they brought it up in our school, actually. Like, our professor, he had a picture of like Adam Meekins shirts, you know, and he said, yeah, there's this guy that's creating all this controversy and has these Manual Therapy Sucks shirts, and he like had a picture of it on our PowerPoint.
Did you buy the shirt?
No.
Oh.
But I just thought it'd be funny.
That would be super aggressive.
Yeah, I know.
That would be a bold strategy.
It is. It's a bold statement. I'm not quite that far on that end of that.
Yeah. You're not there yet?
Mm-mm.
Do you think people should be there?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that you should go as far as saying anything sucks. I feel like black and white is a very narrow way of thinking, you know? But I think the bold does bring people in and get them to critically think, because it's like, why is that person saying that? And why is what I believe about it maybe not accurate?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's necessary for some people. But kind of like I guess what I've learned in my very early stages of being a physical therapist is you kind of have to be in the middle of the road on things.
Yeah.
To not rule out things or rule in things or put one thing on a pedestal, because then you won't learn.
Yeah, I think it kind of blinds you if you take a really extreme opinion, because
yeah,
then you only see that, and it's really hard to be in that middle ground.
Like a purely biomechanical.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So give a brief intro on yourself and how you got into physical therapy school.
Okay, I'm gonna start that over. So I'm a first year physical therapy student, and I'm currently doing my first clinical rotation. I started off undergrad with an interest in psychology, actually. I wanted to work in, like, a hospital setting with pediatric cancer patients. That was kind of, like, my entire life dream. I just always wanted to do that. And then kind of my junior year, sophomore year, I started to really get into health and fitness and lifting and nutrition and all of that and just overall wellness. And I still loved psychology, but I didn't really see myself working in that, like, in a hospital setting. And I also just really was more into, like, movement and that type of wellness, along with, like, mental health. But I just seemed to gravitate more towards that. So when I graduated high school, I actually either wanted to go into PT or into psychology. And I went with psych, but then kind of just reconsidered, I guess, later on in college. And so I decided to take a year off, get, you know, my observation hours, my prereqs, and all that in order.
I finished. Did you graduate in psych? You graduated in psych, and then
decided
that you wanted to do PT?
No, I decided the year before I graduated, so I was actually able to do a summer session and just take, because psych was in the College of Science at Tech, so all I had to do was just add anatomy. And I think that's it. And chemistry. Anatomy and chemistry. Because everything else was already covered.
You had to take physics?
Yeah.
In psych?
Oh, no. I had to take that, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So physics, chemistry, and anatomy. I had to add those in. So that was a fun senior year, you know?
No.
So I crammed all those in, finished that. Then I took a year off. I worked at the gym. And then took the GRE and applied to PT school and got in first round, so that's good, right?
Cool.
Yeah.
How did you get into the lifting?
I think it kind of started on Instagram. I had done a few of those challenges, you know, where it's like a ebook or something. It's like a 30-day challenge to just body weight stuff and like circuit based exercises. Like I did a lot of running in high school and I never really got into lifting, but I had seen some of my friends on like the cheer team or like other teams that had you do strength training, like track had you do strength training, but because I was a long distance runner, we never did. It was a really small school and we didn't have like really good coaches or anything. So then, I don't know, it kind of just appealed to me, and it was what I was seeing a lot on social media. People, it was like that whole movement of like start, like girls should start lifting. And so I asked a few of my guy friends if I could go to the gym with them and just like learn how to use the equipment. And this was towards the end of freshman year of college. I just started lifting and I started to really enjoy it and start to become more comfortable, because at first I was really uncomfortable being like one of the few girls in the weight room. Yeah. And then it just became more normal, I guess, or more less intimidating for me. And then I just grew to really love it, and I started chasing like strength goals and stuff like that, and that definitely changes it. It makes it more exciting.
So do you exclusively do powerlifting now?
I started training more powerlifting style. I got that whole like newbie excitement going on where I was training like above 85% every single day. Ended up with a few injuries here that I'm dealing with now, working around a little bit. So, yeah.
Has that limited your training now, or have you just had to change things?
I've just had to change things, kind of working within a certain percentage and a certain range of motion that I can tolerate right now. I like to run as well, which I know is like a weird combo, like powerlifting and running.
That is.
But I had to dial back a little bit with the running because that was actually a really big contributor. And it's kind of like trial and error. Once I figured out what was really sensitizing me and like really pissing it off, I kind of dialed back that and focused on what I can do. And it's been pretty good. This week actually has been a really good week. My symptoms are like really low. So things are going well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I think we talked about this before. I told you like the general, well, at least in the first time we talked about doing the podcast, I told you the general idea of what the podcast is about and how it's like we're talking to clinicians, we're talking to students, we're talking to strength coaches, we're talking to even patients. And it's all kind of the lens of, like, through public knowledge, like making stuff public knowledge. How would you simplify what someone should do if they're having... So you hurt your back? Was it a back injury?
In the past I have, yeah. But what I'm dealing with now isn't specifically my back.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But yes, I can roll with that.
So what would you tell someone who had a back injury that wanted to continue to train in the manner that they were currently training?
Well, initially I would just tell them, you know, not to freak out, uh-huh. and that probably nothing really serious happened. You know, I mean, this isn't, like we were saying earlier, like this isn't medical advice. Yeah. But I mean, if you rule out...
I think that's going to be in the intro.
What?
Whenever I create the intro for this podcast, like this,
yeah.
this isn't
like a huge disclaimer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's probably better than what they get from WebMD,
yeah.
which, you know, that's,
for sure.
that's a whole other soapbox.
yeah. I think it's kind of similar to what I was telling you earlier about my friend that reached out to me, where yeah. she was saying that her boyfriend had hurt his back deadlifting, and, like, what should he do? And, like, she was kind of freaking out about it. And I think just talking them down from that, oh, shit, I just did something really bad, and just that initial calming them down and letting them know, like, it's okay to move. And it's important to move right now.
Yeah.
And kind of just, like, disassociating that fear that they're going to have, especially with backs. Like, I feel like people just get really freaked out, especially if they feel something pop or they feel something go, like, really wrong mm-hmm. in their head, you know? So I think just, like, calming them down and making sure that they remain, like, clear-headed and not, like, freaking out. And then after that, kind of just see what they can tolerate. Like, in the acute phase, obviously, you're going to dial it back quite a bit and kind of just get them moving and take them through, like, non-threatening movements. And then gradually just, I mean, looking at where maybe something, like, why it went wrong in the first place. So how was their training leading up to the event? Like, were they doing, like, what I was doing in training at, like, crazy high intensities for a yeah. really prolonged period of time?
A lot of volume.
Mm-hmm. And kind of explaining to them, like, why that could have been an issue, or just, like, teaching them how to make those adjustments for the future. And then just working with whatever percentage you do have. If 60% doesn't flare you up and you can handle it, do that. And if you have to cut range of motion, do that. And I think just having that talk with them that, yeah, it's going to suck for now, but we're going to build you back up, you know? Because I know it's really disheartening to, like for me, in the past month, 2 months, I've been going in to, like, a powerlifting strongman gym where everyone's, like, incredibly strong and they're all, like, crushing it.
Yeah.
And I'm there with my, like, box squats, like, box squatting mm-hmm. 130 pounds to, like, a partial range, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing block pulls and, like, you know, it's all this, like, modified stuff. And it's kind of... It hurts as, like, someone who's an athlete and who is really attached to that, or really, it's a really important part of your life.
Yeah.
And you feel like that's kind of taken away from you. And I think framing it as something that you can still do, and it's like, this is just temporary, you yeah. know?
How much more important is it to frame it in that way, to where they still stay in the gym and they're still doing stuff but add modified, rather than just completely taking off? What would your psyche be like, considering you're in your first internship that you're not necessarily a huge fan of?
Mm-hmm.
You can't lift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would you be freaking bonkers right now?
Well, yeah, actually, I had a week a little bit back, like a few weeks back. Everything was really flared up because, like you said, I was at this clinical that yeah. I'm not a huge fan of, and you know, just kind of sitting through that and during that, I have, like, that hour bus ride commute here and back. I'm not really getting a lot of sleep, you know, every single factor is, like, adding up. And then I get to the gym and I have to do this, like, BS, like, program, like, in my head, that's what I was thinking to myself. Like, I was like, oh, this sucks. But then it's like, once you do really stick to it and you start to see yourself slowly, like, because your symptoms aren't just going to go away in, like, a week, you know? And like for me, they'd been around for a year now, and then it was just like a more recent flare-up type of thing, and then there was another thing that happened on top of it. So I've had this like hamstring issue going on for a while, and then I had like this knee pop happen like 3 months ago during coming out of the hole on a squat. And that, like, both of those have just been getting increasingly worse in the past few months. And then I reached out to Jared Maynard from Clinical Athlete, and he's actually coaching me right now. And, like, he's doing my programming, and just trusting someone else to tell me, you know, like, take this day by day and work with what you can do right now, and, like, don't feel bad for only doing this much, because at least you're doing this much, you know? Yeah. And it is hard, honestly. I don't have any like specific magical thing to say to someone to get them in that mindset. They're just gonna have to, like, it's hard work, you know? Every day they have to decide to be committed to sticking to the plan and knowing that in the long term it's gonna pay off. Because I would find myself going in there when I tried to like ease myself back in on my own, I would try and just, like, I'd feel good one day, so I'd be like, okay, well, I'm just gonna, like, do a heavy single today because I finally feel good again and I just want to move some weight, you know? So I think kind of understanding, and I think just having a greater understanding of why you're experiencing the pain you're experiencing and that kind of thing, you know, the educational part of it is really helpful. Because if you're just following what someone's telling you, like, they're telling you to, like, chill out and, like,
take 2 weeks off.
Yeah. Then you're going to be like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you're just doing, like, back stabilization exercises.
Yeah.
Or TheraBands.
Yep.
So, like, it's probably beneficial to replicate what you were doing before as closely as you can, just not going into increased pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I.e., that's what rehab should be.
Exactly.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
You know? And kind of like what you said, what does Greg Lehman always say?
Calm shit down, build shit back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good mantra.
Yeah. I use it a lot with, like, my friends that reach out to me about stuff, or just, like, in general, educating them on how to modify the movements that they want to be doing. Or, like, with running, they'll be like, oh, I always get knee pain with running. And it's like, do you though? Like, is it at, if you run like a half a mile or like 5 miles, is it how fast are you running? Like that type of stuff, you know? And people don't really consider those training variables. It's just like an all or none mentality,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's something that, like, I've found even with just talking to patients at this rotation that they don't understand, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're like, I went and, like, walked all over town with my family this weekend, and I'm so, like, I'm in so much pain, like, that just means I can't walk. And I'm like, wait, so during the week you don't really do anything, really, you know? You walk to your car, you, like, maybe walk around the grocery store, and that's it. And then you go walk, like, 5 miles, and all of a sudden you think it's, like, you just can't walk? Like, I think you kind of just, you know, you just increased your work load like fivefold, you know, in one day.
Yeah.
And they don't really think of it that way, and having someone explain it to them that way, they're like, whoa, I never really thought of it that way. That's a good way to, like, frame it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just knowing that people don't see things the way that we do necessarily as, like, future clinicians and clinicians, and just explaining it to them that way can be helpful.
Yeah.
I don't know, have you had, like, that same experience?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot. All the time. I mean, having more diverse experiences on my rotations in school versus, like, actual paid work, being on this first contract for travel, which was home health, it was more of, like, it was the same thing, but just a little different. Because it was like, well, the reason I'm here is because you can't really leave your house.
Yeah.
But, like, usually with the patients that I knew were, like, striving hard to get better, it was more of, like, they had been told one thing that was just very self-limiting, which left them with pretty much next to no hope of ever getting a shred of what their prior life before this injury or surgery or whatever it was happened. And it was like, I had to encourage them to look past what, like, the current circumstance was and stop focusing on all of the things that they couldn't do. Right. But rather, you can stand up, so that's something to work with. And if you can stand up, you can walk around a little bit. And if you walk around a little bit, probably go up and down some stairs. So just like that, gradual. But I don't know if you'll have to do a home health internship.
Not specifically. Mm-mm.
Well, if you like actually loading people, and you don't have a set of like your own kettlebells that you keep in the back of your car, probably don't want to do home health.
Yeah.
Not to say there aren't good home health therapists, but I don't know. I think to some degree, speaking from my own experience only, and a few of the experiences of my fellow classmates that are doing home health travel right now, it's kind of where your critical thinking skills go to die. So you have to supplement. Kind of like if you're in an internship where you're just like, I'm never going to do this, I never want to do this setting, you have to find something to supplement. So like whenever we did our first podcast with Adam McCluskey, he was like, the reason I started my Instagram was because I wanted to keep myself sharp whenever I was in a skilled nursing facility on my first internship, because I felt like I wasn't using any of my clinical reasoning skills to the degree that I wanted to be. So I needed to have like an outlet to continue to challenge myself and to keep my skills sharpened.
Yeah.
So home health, though. I don't know. You might really like it if you, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Some people really like it because of the freedom. And like if you wanted to just do a side gig.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of like cash PTs who start out in like a gym type setting or something like that who don't have a full caseload yet, supplement their income with home health.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always an option. I don't like to tell people it was an absolute nightmare. But if you're terrified of like what a hoarder's house is actually like, then if you have a fear of the unknown, and unknown I mean something coming out from underneath like a rat or
did that happen to you?
A roach. Oh, roaches galore. No God. Rats. I have an unreasonable fear of mice and rodents because, oh, we could talk about the imprint of fear on one's psyche. So I think it started with, there was one day I was in the backyard with my dad, and there was this giant rat that looked rabid, and I like freaked out because it scared the crap out of me. And he came outside, and he was like, oh, well, it probably got poisoned. And apparently rat poison makes them search for water, and then once they drink the water, they die. I guess that's how rat poisoning works.
Interesting.
I'll never forget it now because it scared the crap out of me. So he took it out. We don't need to go into details on how he took it out, but ever since then, I've just had an irrational fear because I'm scared it's going to run at me, and then I'm going to have to either kick it or crush it, or it's going to, like, try to bite. And the thing with, like, it being under my foot, like, running over things, I, like, do that, like, because I don't want to feel it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want the sensation of feeling something get crushed under me.
Yeah.
And that's why rats scare me. Oh, and fear factor. Whenever they had those episodes of Fear Factor where they would, like, get dumped a vat of rats on them. No. Hell no. I would rather swim with snakes.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. But, so that impression on my mind is never going to go away. So it informs how I feel about a rat every time I see one. So, like, when I was hanging out with Andy, in New York, I saw a giant rat, and he was like, oh, it's not that big. And I was like, what? That is a huge rat. If that came at me, I would run across the street and probably get hit by a car or scream like a little girl. So if that were to ever happen in a home, I mean, I could deal with roaches.
Uh-huh.
I just don't want them to get into my bag and then me take them home.
Yeah.
But if there was ever a rat, peace. See you next time. Never coming back. So what is your goal after graduate? Do you know what? Do you have an idea of what you want to do?
I mean, the dream would be to work out of like a smaller private gym type of setting. Yeah. I feel like, I know that may sound like kind of cliche, but I just think that the setting you work in dictates the mood that you set and the expectations you set with your patients. Walking into the clinic I'm currently at, I feel like it's where, like, you know, progress kind of goes to die a little bit. Like, I would never go in there and be like, wow, I'm going to get stronger, I'm going to get better, you know? It just doesn't set that tone.
Yeah.
And I want patients to come in and feel like we're going to get to work and I'm going to get strong. Because if you come in to a clinic with, like, only a table and then, like, some band exercises, it's like, you're fragile and this is all you can handle. But if you come into this gym where it's like there's barbells and like squat racks and plates everywhere, it's like, I'm badass and I'm about to crush this, you know? And I just feel like that, I don't know, that sets a huge, right? It just sets the mood for what's going to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cause I know personally, like when I had back pain and I went and got treated for it and it was all low level stuff, that would just be very different from someone who helped me reincorporate squats and just helped me get back to what I wanted to be doing, you know? Like, after going through PT for that,
so
I
that
came...
You would say that would be a bad experience that you had with PT?
Yeah, and it was actually at the clinic that I'm currently at. And so...
Oh, man.
So I got, it helped my pain with daily activity, you know, with like sitting in class and all of that, like that was pretty much gone. But every single time I would try to squat and deadlift, I would just get this horrible, horrible pain. Like it was unbearable. I couldn't do it. And I just thought I was never going to, and so I would just, you know, I'll take 2 more weeks off and then I'll try to squat and deadlift again. And obviously that's no way to do it. And yeah, that it went like that for about 6 months. Like, cause he just told me, you know, he was like, oh, just try and like start reincorporating them into your program with like no guidance, you know? And that's kind of a little too general. I needed the more specific, like, let's modify your range. Let's teach you how to brace. Let's make sure your technique is on point, you know? Like bracing under a barbell, not like
a TA.
Yeah. Not like a TA.
In supine. Just chilling on your back.
Yeah. Not like that.
So would you say that's the worst experience you've had with healthcare in general?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't say that was even all that bad because in the end, like, I haven't really had anything. Oh, well, actually, in high school, just coming back to the whole telling people to take time off, I remember I had knee pain with running my freshman year during cross country. And I was actually pretty decent. I made it into the top 5 at my school my first year, and I was really excited. It was a really small school, though. Like, I wasn't good. It was there was like 50 people in my graduating class, but I was doing really well. And then I went to the doctor because I had knee pain, and they were like, "Oh yeah, just take track season off for my freshman year, and take cross country. Yeah, and take cross country season off." For sophomore year. So I took 2 entire seasons off.
What?
Mm-hmm. And they were like...
Knee pain?
Yeah, they were like, just take a year off and you'll be good. So I take a year off, and I'm not good. So, like, it literally, like, made no difference at all. Like, I just went back to running. And then by then, it was just so bad that I would run with, like, knee braces on both knees. And then I had these, like, chronic shin splints that I would just, like... douse with icy hot like all the time before every single track event, like just to get through that event, and then afterwards I would be in excruciating pain. It was terrible. Because we didn't really, like I said, we didn't have like real coaches that knew what was going on, so they were kind of just like, oh, it's fine, just like massage it and icy hot it and stuff. So
did
I did.
Did you foam roll it?
I did not. That's one thing I did not try. I feel like foam rollers were still like coming into trend at that point. I don't know. Maybe I just missed the trend, but but yeah. So that wasn't good because they told me to just take all that time off, and then nothing happened. You know. And I feel like that's just, like, the common advice when you don't know what to do, you know? They're just like, oh, just take some time off. It'll be fine.
So how did you get better? What did you do? Did you start lifting weights when it got better?
I did start lifting weights, and I do not have pain with running anymore. So we can say it was the weights, you know? I'm just kidding. No, I think it had to do more with just reintroducing it in a gradual manner. Like, when I did start running again, I would just run a mile. I wasn't trying to go run like super long distances. And then also just being like understanding what made it worse and not trying to overthink it or overcomplicate it. So if running on the treadmill makes it worse, I'm not going to go into like great detail about why that is. It's just like for me, running outside feels better and like downhills bother it. So I kind of just, this was me thinking, you know, in college, like, so I just avoided that for a little bit. Did things that didn't really exacerbate the symptoms and then slowly reincorporated those things in. And I didn't, like, it's looking back that I realized that that's what I did. But at the time, I was kind of just, like, avoiding it because it hurt, you know? But not taking it completely off because I loved doing it. So, I don't know, I guess inadvertently I did the right thing. But I do think, yeah, I mean, I did start lifting. So we can attribute it to that. Get strong.
I would say that's not a bad attribution.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really...
Can't go wrong getting strong.
Yeah. Is that another...
I think it's a quote? It's someone's mantra. Okay. I like it, though.
Yeah. So what would you say your biggest, like, learning curve being in the clinic compared to what you were learning in school, like... application wise has been?
Well, nothing applies actually.
Nothing.
Okay, well, not nothing, but I'd say at least 80-90% doesn't really apply. Just because in school we're really taught, you know, all the special tests, and a lot of focus on like specific tissues and trying to diagnose exactly what it is, you know, like, is it the bursa? Is it like OA? Is it this? Is it that? And just like super straightforward things like that. And then where I'm shadowing right now, it's a McKenzie certified clinic. So they just have a different approach to categorizing like what's going on with the patient. Also, first semester we did all modalities. And we don't do any passive modalities at this clinic, so all of that, you know, doesn't apply.
Yeah.
And then a lot of other stuff, you know, with like transfers and all the stuff that is more applicable to inpatient. We have a few like people where I put like a gait belt on someone, you know, and that's like about it. And then as for exercise progression, we didn't really learn that in school and we don't really do that here in clinic. So I'm kind of just applying my own. That's kind of what I've been doing to get through this, I guess, is kind of having those conversations to talk people down from being super like freaked out about their pain. Having conversations that reframe like their mindset and then offering to help them progress this stuff outside of clinic and just being like, okay, so you do enjoy these things that we're doing on these machines. You want to start doing that in your own like gym regimen, like I'll write you a program, you know? So that type of stuff has been helping me keep like my thoughts and my thought process going and doing what I want to do and kind of still doing what my clinic like expects of me, if that makes sense. So did I even answer your question? I feel like I went on a tangent there.
We're all about tangents here.
The learning curve. Yeah, it's been interesting. It doesn't quite apply. I feel like I'm kind of just learning as I go.
Yeah. Is there some things that you kind of realize, because you obviously appreciate critical thinking, and I think in order to appreciate critical thinking, you have to critically think. Oh gosh. Critically think yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel like is the thing that you struggle with personally? Cuz I know for me I have a problem with getting super frustrated with the things that they've been told previously. And my first response is usually to say, like, well, whoever told you that's an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, I don't say that, but, like, that's my first thought. And it being doing that for, like, the past few months, it's already, I can already see it, like, starting to wear on me. And I know it's not healthy. Do you find yourself doing that, too?
Yeah, definitely. My first week in clinic, I didn't think I was going to make it past week one. Like, it was, because you hear, you know, it's like, oh, like, they told me it was bone on bone, blah, blah, blah. And you feel a little bit frustrated hearing that when someone tells you a story about a patient they had. But when it's that person sitting in front of you, like, close to tears, telling you they can't do anything because they were told they have, and they say the whole phrase, too. They're like, I have... And they pause and they're like, degenerative disc disease. And I'm just like, oh my God. And then, or they're like, oh, I have arthritis in all, like, every single joint on my body. And, like, my spine is awful. And just hearing those things initially, like, it just, it was like frustration and anger at the people that told them that. And then just like sadness and empathy for the person who's sitting in front of me there, like, completely, like, broken down. And then I kind of just started framing it as, okay, how can I act and what can I say that's going to help them leave here feeling better? So it's not about me. It's not about my frustrations. It's not about who the heck told you that. It's more about what can I say that's not going to attack what you've been told, but that's going to help bring you down from what you're thinking right now. And obviously, I've only been in this clinical for 6 weeks, but I can already tell a change in, like, my body language, my demeanor, because I used to seriously, like, just, like, clench, like, my fists and, like, sit there and just be like, oh my gosh, like, I can't deal with this. And
like,
I would, like,
Arthur meme.
Yeah, exactly like that. And so I would just try to, like, and then I started to just zone out, like, because this was in the first 2 weeks, I was kind of more shadowing than doing anything. And so I would just zone out and not listen, because I would just be like, I can't hear this anymore. Like, this is driving me crazy. And then, I kind of just reframed it, you know, and I definitely struggled with it the first week. It was, because it was every single patient. There was something, like, it's like, oh, my chiro told me I'm misaligned, or, you know, like, something like that. And it's like, how do you tell them, don't worry, like, it's okay, especially if they're still, you know, getting that treatment every single week along with the treatment you provide, you know? So it's kind of like, once someone's been hearing something like that for a really long period of time, especially if they're an adult, like, I don't know, in their 40s or 50s, and I'm this, like, 20-year-old telling them, like, well, actually, that's not really true, you know? It's kind of just trying to talk them down in a way that doesn't attack their beliefs, I guess.
Yeah.
But definitely that is one of my downfalls, especially in school, too. Like, we'd be told, oh, yeah, like, this is how you can find trigger points. And I would just, like, my blood would boil. And I would just be like, how do you know this? You don't know this. And I would just get so, like, so pissed off. And, like, I'm one of those people that reacts very, like, emotionally, very passionately to things that I'm passionate about. And I've definitely learned how to, like, tone
reel
that down.
In.
Yes, reel it in, tone it down a bit, because it's not helpful, mm-hmm. You know? So,
because you can't just come in guns a-blazing.
Yeah, because if you think about it, it's like, you've been exposed to this for so long, but this is the first they're hearing of it. And it's like, if you come in, like, really pissed off, they're going to be really turned off by that and be like, eh, like, I'm not about it.
What would you say to someone who, someone who's listening that thinks that their spine is misaligned? you could give the triggered version. Let's do this. This will be a fun exercise. You could give the triggered version, and then you could give the empathetic, like, as though you were talking to a patient.
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, my first, I feel like I've already practiced this so much that my triggered version is a little less triggered. But I mean, basically, I get angry. Like, I'm like, who the hell told you that? Like, that's the dumbest, that's so dumb. And it's totally unsubstantiated. But then it's kind of just like asking them what they think that means. because I think it's hard to talk someone down or explain why it's not true if you don't understand what they even believe is true, you know? So kind of just being like, okay, you think your spine is misaligned or whatever is out of alignment, and why do you think that? And it's like, I think kind of asking them too, like they're like, oh yeah, it's because I went to like this provider and they told me that. And then if you kind of ask them like, oh well, do you think that that was going on your whole life? Like, have you always had pain with that? Like that type of stuff. And just getting them to reflect on their experience with their body. Like that sounds kind of weird, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like how like they've gone through all these things in like the past and like not had issues, and kind of just like, oh well, maybe that isn't a big deal, you know? Like, cause I found myself doing tangent time, sorry, but I found myself doing that with myself. I've had an internally rotated entire left lower extremity. Like I'm like pigeon-toed only on my left side for my whole life. It's always been like that. And I've just always been like that. And when I started having that like hamstring pain and like my knee pain and all that stuff, I just would look at my leg and be like, this stupid leg, it's like messed up, it's all like internally rotated and stuff, and that's probably why I'm having all this pain. Like if I could just fix that, and because I also overpronate more on the left than the right, whatever that means, you know. but I was told that when I went to get my feet like imaged to get shoes for running shoes. But actually those running shoes, I went to, so funny story, I went to like a shoe store, right, to get actual proper fitting running shoes for my foot type, and they're the worst ones I have. Like I just get ones that feel comfortable normally, and then when I went and actually got these ones that they told me were good for me, it didn't.
They imaged your feet?
Yeah, they like put you in this little scan thing, and it analyzes like your arch and like
what?
And yeah, it tells you how long your feet are. Like one's a little bit longer than the other, and one overpronates
a little
more.
Who reads that? And how do they get? How can they tell if you're overpronating if you're not moving?
I don't know. They probably have some arbitrary measurements of resting foot posture.
Resting foot posture.
I can't even say the word posture without being triggered. The amount of times I'm told that I need to counteract all my slouching. Did you see me slouch today purposefully?
Yeah.
In clinic? Yeah. I just do it despite the posture.
The posture police?
Yes.
Did you intentionally stick your head out like into cervical flexion?
Yeah.
Like forward head posture?
Yeah.
Did your neck hurt?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I must be a unicorn, because everyone else who comes in with forward head posture has neck pain, you know?
So you can't say posture without getting triggered?
Yeah, I don't like that word.
Why not?
Because I've heard it so much. One of our basic interventions is to instruct everyone who is suffering from any type of back pain to sit with a lumbar roll at all times. To make one out of a towel, carry it with them in their car. Like, some people even sleep with one, you know?
Sleep with
to
one?
Keep an upright posture. Yeah, so if you wake up with pain, it's likely due to your sleeping position. So we need to address your sleeping position.
That could have some...
Yeah, yeah.
So what I like to say is, if you're sleeping on your stomach and you wake up and your back hurts, put a pillow under your stomach. Especially if your anatomy dictates that you're a little bit more hyperlordotic in your lower back, so you have a bigger curve. I do.
Mm-hmm.
So like whenever I was a kid and I would play video games laying on my stomach, my back would start to hurt.
Yeah.
Because my body doesn't like that sustained posture.
Yeah.
So if I put a pillow under it, it's fine. If someone's sleeping on a bed and it's really soft and they wake up every day and their back hurts, sleep on a firmer bed and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like,
yeah.
you don't have to, it's not like this over complicated thing.
Yeah, and I think just explaining it in a certain way makes all the difference because I'm not opposed. I'm not this huge like, oh, posture like never matters, and like how you I don't like that word, though, just because of the connotation with it. But just how you carry yourself, how you I guess your just sustained postures throughout the day, like how you sleep, all of that. I think there's some, it matters to some extent from my limited knowledge as a first year student. But I just think the way that we tell people that, or just being like, well, your back pain is actually because you've been slouching your entire life. Like, that's a overgeneralization. Yeah. And telling someone sit with a lumbar roll, like, okay, maybe that helps, you know, ease their symptoms for a little bit. And like, it's fine temporarily, but to tell them that that needs to be a lifelong intervention, you know, like without, as a general thing for everyone, like everyone should be sitting with lumbar rolls because we all slouch throughout the day and we need to counter it with a certain amount of extension every single day. I don't understand that. And I don't know if that's just me not quite having read up on the research enough, or if that's just too much of a blanket statement, you know? And I feel like I find myself wrestling with that a lot throughout clinical. Like, I hear all these extreme opinions. I can't talk right now. Extreme opinions on social media, and I feel like I come at like clinical and I'm just like, no, this is all bullshit, but then I don't know how much is true, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm finding it hard to be able to understand what's substantiated and what's not, and what is fear-mongering and what's not. Like, what's appropriate to tell this patient, like, okay, maybe you should modify the way that you're always sitting or always laying or something like that, and at what times it's not appropriate, you know? And I guess that comes with experience.
Yeah.
And reading more literature and stuff, but
I would say the best advice that I received from one of my mentors is to not automatically place an absolute on someone. It's like, let's try this.
Mm-hmm.
And it might make it better, it might not. Like, saying phrasing things in a way that's not automatically biasing the patient to think one way,
right,
is always a healthy way to be a scientist.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's testing a hypothesis. But if you tell someone, you need to do this, you need to put a pillow between your legs whenever you sleep on your side, or your back is going to hurt.
Yeah.
It's like an automatic shutdown. It's like slam dunking on them.
Yeah. I agree. And I think I've just, because I've heard patients say that so often, they're like, I always knew I had bad posture. And because even I said that when I went there, I was like, I always knew I had bad posture. My mom always told me I had bad posture. And it's like, all of a sudden, you've given them something wrong with them, you know? On top of probably the other things they've been told.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think there's difficulty with saying, let's try this, because clinicians don't want to sound like they're trying things. They don't want to sound like it's trial and error, you know? They don't want to sound like they don't know what they're doing. Because my CI actually just said that to me the other day. Like, he was like, we don't say try or I think or like blah, blah, blah. You know, like, you want to be, like, he was like, you want to tell them, I need you to do this or I want you to do this. Like, be direct. You are the authority here. And I don't know. Like, I feel like there's kind of, it's hard to figure out how to word things for me so I sound knowledgeable, you know? Because especially as a student, I don't want to sound like, oh, let's maybe try this, and then sound like I don't know what I'm doing. But I also don't want to talk in absolutes because, like you said, that sets a certain expectation.
I think framing it in a way that's like a test retest, because you're trying to pinpoint the thing that needs to change or be altered.
Yeah.
I mean, giving someone, I don't think you can go wrong with giving someone the power over what they're doing, because it's them. It's like, why do you need to say, I need you to do this?
Right.
That's like, I feel like that kind of puts it on a pedestal in and of itself by saying that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't agree with that.
Yeah.
I think giving someone the option, or like asking them if they want to know more about it, it's like they're giving you permission to hear about it. So it's like, if they don't want to hear it after that, then at least you ask permission. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just talking at people, it's talking with people.
Yeah. I feel like there's days when we do a better job at that and days where we don't, you know? Like, I don't want to place judgment on how he interacts with his patients, you know, because it's just like sometimes you say things a certain way and you're like, dang it, I could have worded that better, you know? Yeah. So I don't want to be too, you know, like judgy, I guess, but it is frustrating sometimes when you hear something and you see how the patient interpret it and you're like, ooh, like, I wish you had worded that differently, you know? But I mean, we do the best we can, I guess, right?
Yeah, I agree. What would you say is the one thing that is your core mission to fix in healthcare? As in, if you never had to hear a patient tell you this again because it was no longer a thing at a societal level, so they didn't believe a false thing, what would it be?
Gosh.
What's your biggest trigger?
There's so many. I think, especially because we see so many spine patients, it's got to be the degenerative disc disease, the disc bulges, all of that. And then my spine is so messed up. Like, trust me. Or this sentence, trust me, I've seen it on the MRI. It looks awful. Or my doctor told me, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Because we had a patient, I thought that was a joke. Like, I didn't think that was real. I thought people were exaggerating. But a patient came in the other day and said that the doctor called her and was like, let me just pull up your results real quick, and was like, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And it's like, why? Like, I just don't understand what they think they're accomplishing by saying things like that. And so if I could have a patient never say that again, that would be awesome. Like, because it's just so upsetting, because they come in with this expectation that they can't do something because their spine is just like gonna snap, you know?
Yeah.
Or that it's so easily going to misalign or whatever, you know? And I think just the idea that we're so easily broken, if everyone could come in with a more resilient mindset, and just the idea that injuries happen and pain is normal,
yeah,
type of thing, rather than a death sentence, you know?
Yeah. I like to pose the question, if everyone has it, in terms of degenerative disc disease, like, just like everyone's going to get wrinkles and gray hair, is having degenerative disc disease on an image, should that be a medical diagnosis if literally everyone over adolescence is going to have it?
Yeah.
I don't think it should be.
Yeah.
Or joint narrowing.
And I wish that was... Oh,
but
sorry,
I'll tell you a win. So a win. My powerlifting friend from back in Austin, he had a abdominal strain. And I told him, I consulted with my pelvic floor specialist friend. And we gathered that the mechanism of injury wasn't too serious. It was probably just an abdominal strain because he was valsalving too hard with rotation doing a single arm row. And I was like, but you should probably still go get it checked out because I can't check if it's a hernia,
mm-hmm,
over the phone.
Right.
And he was like, they did a CT scan. My abdomen is totally normal. The only thing they said was that I have mild degeneration in my lower lumbar.
Oh, my God.
But then he followed it up with the crying laughing emojis.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was like, yes.
That's awesome.
He's not looking too far into this.
Yeah.
You can still back squat over 500.
Yes.
You're good.
Yeah. It's just crazy, though, because even once you tell the patient that, you know, like, okay, well, actually, everyone has it, it's such a foreign concept to them. Like, they're like, what do you mean I can have,
yeah,
something going on that doesn't reproduce pain? And so I think, going back to your question, if there is one thing that I could make common knowledge, is just that we change and our bodies adapt as we age. And a lot of things you see on imaging aren't an issue, you know? And just that just being a common thing that everyone knows, that would save us so many conversations, because it's like you're coming out of left field with what you're telling them. Like, they're like, what are you talking about? This is nothing I've ever heard before.
You probably shouldn't come in. That could be considered coming in hot.
Yeah.
Where it's like, everybody has it. You're not a snowflake. Like, yeah.
Are you quoting someone?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I
but,
don't.
I mean, you know, sometimes, like, if you're on that level with a patient and you're comfortable saying that and you know that they're going to respond to it, heck yeah. But, like, in a initial evaluation setting where you're just meeting someone, you've never had a conversation with them before, they have a lot of beliefs surrounding their issue, yeah, probably not.
I agree.
Cool. Well, wrapping up, where can people find you on the internet?
Are you really going to make me share my handle on here? So,
what do you mean?
Because I get so much shit for it. But
why?
So, well, because...
Because of the name?
Yeah.
Why? You named it.
I know. So when I started my Instagram, it was a fitness Instagram. And, I mean, it still is, pretty much. I just post some mediocre lifting videos and food. But anyway, you can find me at Oreos and Squats, because cookies are great and squats are awesome. So that's my Instagram handle. And I'm hoping to start to, you know, share more, like, PT-related stuff on there and more informational content, I guess. Just because I feel like that has always been my mission, like, when I first started it, with lifting isn't, you know, like, this thing that girls can't do, you know, and then like flexible dieting, I was really into sharing that because I saw tons of people just going on crazy diets and like doing like tons of restrictive things and just preaching that type of stuff, you know, and being like not going into extremes and kind of just sharing more up-to-date knowledge, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people that follow me have a lot of false beliefs, and I think I could change a lot or make an impression, you know, by starting to share those type of things. Because I feel like the crowd that I follow on Instagram is all very, like, like-minded, and I forget that people don't, that these aren't common beliefs, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I definitely want to start moving in that direction and sharing some of that information. But yeah, that's pretty much the only social media site I'm active on, would be Instagram.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on the Alinity Life podcast.
Yeah, thanks
Panera.
For having me.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow us for more content on Instagram and Facebook at The Alinity Collective and our website, thealinitycollective.com. Additional platforms you can download the podcast include iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Player FM, or wherever else you get your podcasts. New episodes dropping weekly.